Hello, everyone, and welcome to this special University of Arizona podcast series, Focus on Our Future, featuring Carson Scholars from the University of Arizona's Institute of the Environment. This is Gina Murphy-Darling from the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. For your information, the Carson Scholars Program is designed to build a network of graduate students and faculty devoted to furthering knowledge and awareness of Earth's natural environment and its interactions with people. I am very pleased today to welcome Leetris Niels. She is a PhD student at the School of Natural Resources and the Environment. She earned a BS in Conservation Biology from Arizona State University, as well as an MS in Interdisciplinary Ecology from the University of Florida. Welcome, Leetris, and thank you so much for being with me to talk about a really exciting and I'm sure somewhat challenging life that you are living in your study of the cats.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
And we don't mean the Arizona Wildcats, which it's going to be final four seasons, so we want to make sure people know these are cats that live in the wild. And I want to get right down to all of the important research you're doing. You study in Namibia, but let's talk about the primary focus right now in your research is human carnivore conflicts. So just talk, give us a background on you founded an international organization to help conserve cats, a nonprofit called Conservation Catalyst. You've done a lot and you're very young. So let's hear what you're doing to help save these precious cats.
Well, my focus is human carnivore conflict, and that's a topic that's really near and dear to my heart. I grew up on a farm, and we had a lot of goats and chickens and bulls, and we had tremendous problems. In fact, I remember a very emotional story of being woken up very early in the morning and having our prized Nubian doe slaughtered, and that was by a pack of feral dogs. But you know, where, no matter where you are in the world, that same problem exists between livestock and carnivores. And the carnivores change, but the problems persist throughout the world. And so ever since I was very young, it's been a topic that's been very near and dear to my heart, particularly because I've been so committed and devoted to carnivores and cats since I was a little girl. But trying to, you know, I think I understand the farmer's perspective in a unique way, and that really makes me see the issues from both sides, not just from the farmer's side and not just from the cat's perspective. And so it really motivates me to find solutions that ultimately do benefit both.
And that's very challenging because they do have their side. And a lot of time on the conservation side, there isn't any tolerance for that. But what got you to the point where you felt you could understand the perspective of the farmers as well as being the stand for the conservation of the cats?
Well, I mean, I think like most wildlife biologists, I got into this field because I love animals. And
right.
And most wildlife biologists, you know, they want to work with animals, but you don't want to work with people. I mean, that's kind of the dream easy job. But we don't have that luxury anymore. You know, I mean, these species are going extinct. They're being persecuted. And, you know, we have to work with people. And I'm very fortunate. My research in Namibia, I live with livestock farmers. I eat with them. I know their families. I attend family events. And I see their perspective. I mean, if they lose too many sheep, they're not going to be able to pay for their kids' school.
It's a great cost.
It is.
It's a great cost.
And it is. And it's an emotional cost, too. I mean, they are very invested in their livestock, not just from a financial perspective, but they feel a very tremendous emotional bond to them. The same way that I felt a very tremendous emotional bond to our goats that were persecuted and were slaughtered by feral dogs. And so I think I can understand their perspective, and that really motivates me to try to find an honest solution that does help them as well.
And is the major issue encroachment because of populations expanding, or what is it that you study to help find the magic solutions where they can all live in harmony? I mean, you're right. It's a very big personal issue. If I have my farm and this is my way of making a living, and the cats come and eat my sheep or whatever, my cows, it's an issue.
It
so
is.
What do you study?
So There's really not a magic solution. What I'm specifically studying is first of all, there's no research on many of these species, no scientific research. A lot of it is hearsay, and they think that they do this, or they think they move here or eat this. And so first and foremost, I get sound scientific data. So I put radio collars on these cats. I find out where they're going, what they're eating, how far they're moving, how often they kill. And then I use those data to really inform. We sit down with the farmer and I tell them, this is what the cats are doing on your farm right now. I take them to the kill sites. I show them how the cats are moving. And then we come up with solutions. Well, can we maybe move the sheep out of this area because the cats are really honing in this area because maybe there's water here? Or, you know, can we move the lambing closer to the house where the cats really aren't moving because they tend to be very shy and secretive around people? And so we come up with solutions kind of individually based on every farm, but there's really no blanket solution or Band-Aid that's going to fix it. And so it's a tremendous amount of give and take. And sometimes there are cats that are consistently killing livestock. They're selecting for livestock. And then that's when really hard decisions have to be made, where we either have to go in and relocate that cat, or sometimes that cat does need to be removed because it's, in a lot of instances, they're injured and livestock is just an easier prey source. And the cost of having that cat around is, you know, often doesn't outweigh the cost of having a whole population of cats that are not going to necessarily take livestock.
So it's complicated. I mean, as with everything in almost any interview I've ever done. So when you're gathering the scientific research, are you gathering where the cats are, where their roaming patterns are, what, you know, tell us a little bit about the meat of the research, about what you're studying.
So the meat of the research, I catch cats. And originally I thought I would be out there setting traps and catching cats. Now, for the most part, in fact, I don't have enough funding, so I don't have enough collars, but it's the farmers catch cats. And these are cats that they would kill. And they have them in the cage and they call me and we
wow.
sit and we talk about it, you know, and I usually keep that cat for a couple days in the cage and we see if their livestock losses continue, because in many instances, it's not actually the cat. In every case except for one, I've been able to convince them to allow me to put a radio collar on that cat. And that's really the key. Those radio collars and getting funding for those collars are the key to the success. And then we follow that cat together. So I follow it and I give them updates when I'm on their farm, what the cat's doing. I take them to the kill so I can show them, look, this cat fed on an antelope. It's not eating your sheep, or it's on this side of your farm. So if you've losses on another side of your farm, it's not this cat. And that really has been able to transform their perceptions of the cat. And I think more than anything I could ever say to them, it's showing them those data. It's building those relationships, taking them out there and proving to them that this is what's actually happening. It's not just, you don't have 10 cats on your farm. You have one cat, and it's really not the problem.
Kind of letting facts get in the way, but they're open to it. I just have to ask you this. I mean, it's for someone like me sitting here, it's like the penultimate adventurous experience trapping cats in Namibia. This is really, for I'm sure a lot of my listeners, quite exciting. How did you, let's reel back a little bit to, how did you begin to build the trust with the farmers, and why did you pick Namibia? Those are two questions, but I want to make sure they both get answered.
That's a really good question. So I've just always been, since I was a little kid, obsessed with spotted cats mostly. You know, they're very sexy and very charismatic. And
indeed.
And I just absolutely was mesmerized. And I worked on jaguars and mountain lions here in Arizona and in Mexico, and then also in Belize. And that allowed me, I was invited actually to go work in Namibia, to work mostly on cheetahs and leopards, you know, these big, sexy spotted cats. And it was at that time that I came across my first caracal. I really didn't know much about them.
And tell us what a caracal is.
So a caracal is this medium-sized, majestic cat. It looks like a small mountain lion with that beautiful kind of rust color fur. However, they have a shorter tail. And they have these very long, elegant ear tufts with these long black tassels at the end and just very expressive faces. I mean, they're just absolutely such a mesmerizing cat. You can't help but see them and just fall in love. And I came across a caracal in 2002, and it was caught by a farmer. And he had it in like a small chicken coop and was going to kill it. And he had contacted this cheetah organization. And there wasn't a lot of interest in this cat. You know, they're very focused on cheetahs and leopards, kind of the big sexy cats that bring in a lot of funding. And so I ultimately got to be the one that rehabilitated this cat and released this cat back into the wild. And I was just so hooked, and I started trying to learn everything I could and realized we didn't know anything about them. And then as I was living in Namibia, I kept asking farmers, and they said, no, you know, these cats are being killed by the thousands. And I thought, how could this be? You know, these cats are being killed by the thousands and we don't know anything about them. I mean, this doesn't seem right. I mean, especially this day and age.
I'm quite sure I never heard of them.
And yeah.
I, you know, like to pride myself as a wildlife observer and lover.
Most people haven't, and that's another challenge that I face in trying to gain support for the project. But I kept thinking someone's going to do something. You know, someone will help protect these cats. And years went by. I went on, I got my master's, and I kept thinking about that caracal. And then I realized that there was a point where no one had done anything, and no one was going to do anything. And that really motivated me. I just found a way to go back there. And I really started talking to livestock farmers, found the most vocal livestock farmers that hated these cats, and came up with, just started talking with them, and ultimately they've become some of my best friends. In fact, both of them have been out to Arizona to visit me.
You're kidding.
You know, but that it took a lot of sitting down over braais, barbecues, or tea, and going out looking at kills and really developing that type of trust. And you know, and now they've become some of the biggest advocates for this project.
And there's an understanding. I mean, it was an education. And you said 2002, and it's 2014. So you've been on this journey quite a while.
I have, yeah. And this is a journey that I expect to be on, you know, for decades to come. I mean, it's a lifelong commitment to these cats that I have.
And you're hoping that you'll prevent some of them from becoming extinct. Obviously, that's one of the big things. Yes?
Yes, yeah. So caracals are in a unique point because according to the IUCN, they're least concerned, but they're data deficient. So we really don't know what's going on with these cats at all. And they have an incredibly expansive range. They range through southern Africa up into northern Africa and historically down into India. So they have one of the widest distributions of any carnivore in the world. However, throughout that range, they've been extirpated throughout probably a very large portion of it. But we don't know. We don't have any data to support that. They're critically endangered in some areas like Turkey. However, they're still considered vermin and pests in Namibia and South Africa and are persecuted by the thousands. So there's just a lot that we still need to learn about these cats. And so I'm hoping to get population estimates and then use those data to help change the perspective so that they're no longer listed as a pest species.
So we have about a minute left, which I told you time would fly, and I certainly hope to have you as a return guest, maybe for a Down to Earth show where you have an entire half hour to talk about it. Is your nonprofit Conservation Catalyst, is there a website?
There is. Yep. The nonprofit website is www.conservationcatalyst.com. And
it's just like it sounds. It's CATALYST, and people can make donations there if that was a call to action.
Yes, they can make donations, or you know, just help spread the word about these magnificent cats. That more than anything, I really need people just to
spread awareness
about them. Yeah,
that's what you'd like to do. It's been an unbelievable interview. It felt like about a minute, so it did feel like a minute. Seriously, everybody. So I have had the pleasure of interviewing Elytris Niels. She is a Carson Scholar from the University of Arizona, working with the wildcats in Namibia. Thank you for joining us for this special University of Arizona podcast series, and we invite you to listen to the entire four-part podcast series, Focus on Our Future, featuring Carson Scholars from the Institute of the Environment. If you'd like to learn more about this important program and how you can support it, visit carson.arizona.edu. Thank you so much, Elytris, for being a part of the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful.